It was early in the evening of August 1st, and Roelof Carter and his wife Rosalind had gotten to arguing again.
We couldn't, you know, get to no agreement, and then we just, you know, broke company. I parked the car, and we broke apart, and I got on my bike.
The argument had attracted the attention of neighbors who called the Ferguson police. Officers tried to stop Roelof less than a mile from his house. The police report says Roelof was drunk, uncooperative, and aggressive, which he denies. He was eventually tased and charged with resisting arrest. Roelof says he could have easily ended up like Michael Brown.
They shot him because they figured he was resisting.
Specific use of force policies vary from department to department in the St. Louis area, but they are all governed by the standards set out in a 1989 U.S. Supreme Court ruling.
Objectively reasonable use of force.
Charles Huth is a sergeant with the Kansas City Police Department. He also helps make sure that the state's 19 licensed police academies are correctly training their recruits on the use of force.
Irrespective of what I might have meant to do, the objective look at that force is, was what that officer did reasonable in light of the facts and circumstances that confronted them? And would officers with similar training and experience in similar context respond similarly?
What's reasonable will be different in different circumstances, says David Klinger. He's a professor of criminology and criminal justice at the University of Missouri-St. Louis and a former police officer.
I'm 6'4", I weigh 225. You're not nearly that large. And so therefore, I would be able to use lesser forms of force to accomplish the same task than you would. And the public needs to understand that non-lethal options are not always viable.
Kajimi Powell, for example, was showing some signs of mental illness when he was shot and killed. Many have asked why officers did not use their tasers instead. But Powell was wearing a sweatshirt, and tasers have to make contact with the skin to be effective. As Klinger puts it, if someone's approaching you with a knife, you want to make sure you stop the threat. Race also becomes part of the discussion. Many deadly force cases involve white officers killing young black men, which leads to complaints that police are just looking for reasons to shoot African Americans. Umzels Klinger says officers he spoke to for his book about deadly force told him the exact opposite.
All else equal, if this guy was white, I was going to shoot him. But because he was black, I knew that there was going to be hell to pay because the community was going to be upset, so on and so forth. Maybe that'd be prosecuted.
Clarence Harmon, a former mayor and the first black police chief of the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department, sees race playing a much more negative role than Klinger does.
As a mayor of this city, I was widely known because I was on TV a lot. But I go to places still where the fact of me walking in, I can see from the looks that I get from people who are not African American, there's a heightened sense of concern.
If you're starting from the premise that someone is a threat, Harmon says, it's easier to reach a point where you believe your life is in danger. And that's why police need to have a strong relationship with the community they serve.
Where there is that relationship, you're less likely to find to receive a negative response from the community when it's necessary to use a lethal force. And sometimes it in fact is.
Charles Huth with the Kansas City Police Department says he doesn't think Michael Brown's death will prompt a sea change in use of force policies, but he hopes it gets officers thinking about the importance of relationships. I'm Rachel Lippman, St. Louis Public Radio.